Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namaskritya, we can sing together. Narayanam Namaskritya, Narayanam. So today we're reading from a chapter entitled Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons. So he gets his name in the chapter heading. Pretty infamous demon. Text 11, and we'll sing the Sanskrit together. Vishnur Dvija Kriya Mulo Yagyo Dharmam Yakuman Devashi Pitri Bhutanam Dharmasya Cha Parayanam. And the translation, let's read this together. The basic principle of Brahminical culture is to satisfy Lord Vishnu, the personification of sacrificial and ritualistic ceremonies. Lord Vishnu is the personified reservoir of all religious principles, and he is the shelter of all the demigods, the great pitas, and the people in general. When the brahmanas are killed, no one will exist to encourage the kshatriyas to perform yajñas, and thus the demigods, not being appeased by yajña, will ultimately die. Purport. Since Vishnu is a central point of Brahminical culture, Hiranyakashipu's plan was to kill Vishnu. For if Vishnu were killed, naturally the Brahminical culture would also be lost. With Brahminical culture lost, yajña would no longer be performed, and for want of yajña, the regular distribution of rainfall would cease. Yajña bhavati parjanya. Thus there would be disturbances all over the world, and naturally the demigods would be defeated. From this verse, we get a clear indication of how human society is disturbed when the Vedic Aryan civilization is killed and the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies performed by the brahmanas are stopped. Kalau Shudra Sambhava. Because the population of the modern world consists mostly of Shudras, the Brahminical culture is now lost and is extremely difficult to reestablish in a proper way. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya has recommended the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, which will revive Brahminical culture very easily. Harir Nama, Harir Nama, Harir Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatiranyata. Because of the increment in demoniac population, people have lost Brahminical culture. Nor is there a Kshatriya government. Instead, the government is a democracy in which any Shudra can be voted into taking up the governmental reins and capture the power to rule. Or like we see today, a dictatorship that's gone awry. Because of the poisonous effects of Kali Yuga, the Shastra in Bhagavatam 12.2.13 says, Dasyu Prayeshu Rajasu, the government will adopt the policies of Dasyus, or plunderers. Familiar, anyone? Thus, there will be no instructions from the brahmanas, and even if there are Brahminical instructions, there will be no Kshatriya rulers who can follow them. Aside from Satya Yuga, even formerly in the days when demons were flourishing, Hiranyakashipu planned to destroy the Brahminical culture and the Kshatriya government, and thus create chaos all over the world. So he's taking down the head of the society and the arms of the society, like the functional protecting part of the society. Although in Satya Yuga, this plan was very difficult to execute, in Kali Yuga, which is full of Shudras and demons, the Brahminical culture is lost and can be revived only by the chanting of the Maha Mantra. Therefore, the Krishna consciousness movement, or the Hare Krishna movement, has been inaugurated to revive Brahminical culture very easily so that people may become happy and peaceful in this life and prepare for elevation in the next.
In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya quotes this verse from the Brahmanda Purana.
Viprayagyadi mulam tu hariritya suram matam harireva hi sarvasya mulam samyan mato nripa.
O king, the demons think that Hari, Lord Vishnu, exists because of the brahmanas and yajna, but factually, Hari is the cause of everything, including the brahmanas and yajna. You know how Krishna says he's the string upon which all the pearls rest. He's not. It's not the other way around. Therefore, through the popularizing of Hari Kirtan or the Sankirtan movement, the Brahminical culture and Kshatriya government will automatically come back and people will be extremely happy. So this is a very hope-giving purport in the context of things that we're hearing about and in our current society and our current world too. One thing that I want to point out here is that Prabhupada says that the Hare Krishna movement has been inaugurated to revive Brahminical culture very easily so that people may become happy and peaceful in this lifetime. And it's such a great thing that we have that, because imagine if we had to, you know, we're trying to share this message with people. Imagine if we had to share with them the yoga ladder of the Bhagavad Gita instead. Like, oh, you need to first do Karmakanda, then you need to do, you know, all these different steps, right? Karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga. And that whole thing can take lifetimes, not just one lifetime, but many, many. So imagine you're trying to advertise something like that. Okay, you're going to get started in this life, but then, you know, you're not going to really see the results for lifetimes. That wouldn't be very appealing to our current population of people who are, you know, they have attention span of like, what is it, 8 seconds, something like that. In Kali Yuga, we're all very short attention span. So to think of something going beyond one lifetime is just like, that's not going to work. But here we have such an amazing situation that bhakti yoga is actually, you can apply it and you can almost instantaneously feel some kind of reciprocation result. So what an amazing thing to be able to share with people. First, I want to just talk briefly about the nature of Hiranyakashipu. Like, he has this demoniac inclination, this envy of God, and he wants to take down everything and destroy Vishnu and destroy all for the purpose of what? What is his main motive? Revenge and to assert his supremacy. Yeah. And what else? Sense gratification. Yeah. So there's several different answers. So there's revenge towards his brother. But just if he was a pious person and felt revenge, maybe it wouldn't be as extreme. But he's like feeling revenge coming from this envious place, right? This place of wanting to be the enjoyer, wanting to be that supreme ruler. And then on top of it, wanting to please his own senses as well. So it's all mixed together. And we see that later in his story, that he wants to become the top dog, so to speak, of the pack, right? So how does this apply to us? He's a very kind of a big general example, or I should say an extreme example of this sort of desire to turn away from God and actually wanting to kill God. That's an extreme example, right? Wanting to wipe it out, wanting to be done with all that and just like enjoy this world and rule it. But we can see this if we are self-reflective. We can find this tendency within, I'm not saying all of you have this tendency, but I know that within myself, this tendency to want to turn our face from Krishna. And that is akin to what Hiranyakashipu is doing on a grand scale. So that nature, that envious nature, like I want to be the supreme enjoyer. Why does Krishna get to stand there on the altar? Why can't I be on the altar? Or something like that, right? That kind of nature of just feeling envy, and it doesn't just apply necessarily to Krishna, but the envy of those who are happily serving Krishna. Like, why are they just so happy? And I want to hurt religious movements or take down. Yeah. Like we see that people destroying churches, mosques, temples, that kind of envious, that wanting to cause others pain because of that envy. So anytime we turn, there's a Sanskrit phrase, Bahir Mukha, turning our Bahir, like our Mukha, our turning it, our face away from Krishna. Anytime we do that, we feel what? What do we feel? What comes up for us when we turn our face from Krishna? What's the first thing that happens when we turn our face away from Krishna? Did you say we're lonely? Yeah, we're lonely. Yeah. Turning our face through darkness. There was, Prabhupada gave an analogy. I think it was in the Science of Self-Realization, maybe, of the hand that's the light is, like, say you have a hand here and the light's shining on the top, like, oh yeah, and bright light. As soon as you just go right here, as soon as you're under the hand, you're like, oh, it's dark. And it's because it's not, the sun's not, it's being covered, right? So as soon as we turn away, we're allowing ourselves to be covered by the material energy. And so we're in that darkness away from Krishna. So you're either in the sunlight of Krishna's presence, or you're in the darkness of his material energy. Yeah, so it's quite sobering. What else? What happens when we turn away from Krishna? Confusion? Fear. Yes, that's a huge one. Fear. Everything we do is motivated by running away from fear. Like, we're fear driven often, right? What else? Yes, we're captured. And then we start thinking that, our neighborhood becomes very important, and our family and our country and all of that things. Yes. Yeah. Incessant. Wow. So never ending material desire. That's a good one. Yes, Christine.
Well, life is a struggle.
Yeah, life is a struggle. Who here can relate to that when we're turned away from Krishna, even in our mentality? Like, show of hands, who can relate to that? Okay, everyone has had that moment, right? Just even in one day, within the 124 hours that we're given in a day, we can see ourselves, if we're reflective again, that, oh, now I'm turning to Krishna. Oh, now I'm turning to my senses, my desires, right? And that flip-flopping, notice what happens when you're turning away from Krishna in your mind or in your heart for even for a few seconds. What goes on? And you'll notice that what Christina said is just kind of, what word did you use?
Struggle.
Struggle, yes. That the mind becomes, things become more important that we're going through in our mind and everything. The word that came to me is suffering. That when we're Bahir Mukha, turned away from Krishna, we experience pain and suffering. Because our natural position of the soul is to be with Krishna. We're part and parcel of him. So it makes sense that when we're kind of cutting ourselves off from our source, we're just going to be suffering. There's like examples. There's different examples of this, but there's the example of you find a little, like a nail or a little screw on the ground. And you're like, oh, I wonder where this came from. Maybe it's from one of the tables. And it's just like a lonely little piece of something, and you're like, oh, okay, throw it in the garbage. It just has that kind of, when it's separate from the main part, it's no longer, it in itself no longer is really worth much. Of course, we're inherently worthy because we're parts of Krishna and he deeply cares about each one of us. So we're never really rejected. But that suffering automatically comes when we're separated from our life and soul. Our prana, hey, the source of our life. So yes, Hiranyakashipu is not really relatable when it comes to our day-to-day life, but when we look into our own hearts, we can see maybe something that's similar of, I kind of want to enjoy here. I don't really want to do the Krishna thing. You know, that kind of mentality can come up. And then if we're just being really sincere in our spiritual life, it's okay. That comes up and we can notice and go, oh, okay, I've tried to enjoy for a while. And what happened? I tried. And then after a while, it was again taken from me, right? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur in this Kalyana Kalpa True, actually, we were just doing this song. There's one bhajan where he says that, he's talking to his mind. He says, you love the waves of lusty desires, kama, right? This desiring, this wanting material things, lust. You should give up material lust and cultivate pure love of God. In this way, you can spread the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. And then here's the part that's really relevant to us when we're turning ourselves from Krishna. Material lust is temporary, devoid of peace, and very restless. someone, you said confusion, Trisha, but there was like some few, I felt like there was some of that in the answers that you gave, some kind of restlessness and perturbed, right? It does not quench one's thirst for happiness. Although you want so many things for fulfilling your lusty desires, you will never be able to get them all. And even if you were to get them all, they would soon leave your association. So it's, we're kind of doubly suffering here. First, we're like, oh, maybe I can enjoy separate from Krishna. Oh, go for it, go for it, go for it, lifetime after lifetime. Huh. And you know, the most amazing thing, sometimes I think about this, it's just incredible how this resilience of the soul, just like go and go and keep trying, like, boy, this determination. It's actually a symptom of the soul, but it's just turned the opposite way. Like this endless desire to serve Krishna there, right? In all of us, like we can go and serve Krishna forever. But when that's shifted over to material energy, we can just go and just keep trying and trying and trying to find happiness. From the perspective of higher beings, it must look so silly. Yeah. Just like, wow, they keep trying. Like, it's like if you watched, I don't know, like a little rat race or something, and just keep seeing the rat bump into a wall, and you're just like, why does it keep bumping into the wall? Like, you know, and that. So from that higher perspective, it must look very silly. But so we have that endless drive to try to find the material happiness that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is talking about here. But then he says, even, and we usually can't get everything we want. We'll have like a Santa Claus list, right? All the things that we wish we could have. I know, like, I didn't really grow up with the Santa Claus thing, but I know that some children will write like a long list, like, these are all the things I want from Santa Claus. And then the parent will be like, okay, well, Santa Claus can't bring all of that, because that's not practical. But that's kind of just a, like a description of us. So if we have a long list, here's my bucket list, here's my, all the things I wish I could get from this lifetime. But most likely we're not going to, so we're already going to be disappointed. But then if we do get something on that list, even then we end up being disappointed because it's temporary. So that's the harsh reality of this world. It's pretty heavy. And there are many people in this world who hit that realization without having the shelter of spiritual life to turn to. They realize there's no happiness in this world, but then they're kind of just adrift. It's like, oh my gosh, there's no happiness. And at the same time, I don't know what to go towards. Like, I just kind of, and that place, that yearning, if us, all of us, and the spiritual, sincere spiritual seekers can help those souls who are like wanting something, they just don't know what it is. They're ripe, you know, they're ripe for this Krishna consciousness. So the conclusion of this section that we read today is that the different things we touched on, one is that we can reflect on our own heart when we see this Hiranyakashipu attitude, and very humbly ask Krishna for help with it, and ask the devotees to help us purify that. And then also our responsibility, Prabhupada is saying in this purport that the Hare Krishna movement is meant to revive Brahminical culture very easily. So all of us in this room were meant to take part in this, which is practicing bhakti yoga and sharing it. So purifying our own hearts, cleaning our own heart by chanting the Maha Mantra, and then sharing it with others and purifying the social, societal level aspect of things by this Maha Mantra sharing. And our responsibility is very, very important. So we can think on how can I be Brahminical in sharing Krishna consciousness with others? How can I be an instrument of Krishna consciousness, of the Sankirtan movement, so that others become attracted? That's a huge responsibility. Like, what can my role, how can I do this in a way that's sustainable and helps others come to Krishna consciousness in a way that will enliven them for a long time and won't turn them off? So we can ask ourselves these questions. How do I spread Krishna consciousness in a Brahminical way, which is patient, kind, compassionate, peaceful, and giving that to others, like encouraging them. So those are the take-home messages.